Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
After the Muslims conquered Jerusalem and Cordoba and Constantinople, they built victory mosques. And now they want to build a mosque by ground zero. Where does Bob Etheridge stand? He won't say, won't speak out, won't take a stand.
The terrorists haven't won. And we should tell them in plain English, no, there will never be a mosque at ground zero. I'm Renee Elmers, and I approve this ad.
That ad for a Republican candidate running for Congress and doing quite well in North Carolina has been called the most anti-Muslim ad of the current political season. But it has close competition, which tells you something about politics today, specifically GOP politics.
That mosque is a monument to their victory and an invitation for more. A mosque at ground zero must not stand. The political class says nothing. The politicians are doing nothing to stop it. But we Americans will be heard.
That ad never ran, and the Republican National Trust, the political action committee behind it, isn't officially an arm of the Republican Party. But the Republican National Trust supports Republican candidates, and more of these candidates are running against the mosque, running against the idea of an encroaching Islamization of America. And it's not just opposition to Israel. Exit polls in the 2008 Republican primaries in many of the southern states revealed that Mitt Romney's Mormonism was a problem for many Republican voters. And as for respect for atheists, God forbid, here's Elizabeth Dole's famous ad from 2008 calling her opponent godless.
The godless Americans held a fundraiser in her honor in Boston. Hagen attended and took their money.
In our 30 issues in 30 days series, we ask, are Republicans pandering to religious bigotry? Joining us to talk about this are Jeff Charlotte, journalist and author of Sea Street, The Fundamentalist Threat to American Democracy. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, Mike.
And in a few moments, we'll get local with WNYC reporter and blogger Ozzie Pebara. Ozzie, if you just hold on for a second, we'll get to you in a moment. So, Jeff, what I did there, and I should identify myself, I'm Mike Peskin for Brian Lehrer, I kind of presented a prosecutor's brief. I did not note that Kay Hagan's response, she was the Democrat, wasn't, what's wrong with atheism? It was, I'm a Sunday school teacher. I'm really godful. And we should also note that President George W. Bush visited a mosque within a week after 9/11. I have a list of 25 occasions where he spoke of Islam as a religion of peace or of the United States embracing Islam. And also we could note that Democrats frequently use this rhetoric. But Jeff, on the essential question, what do you think about the idea that Republicans are pandering to religious bigotry?
There's no question that it happens. There's no question that we see it in campaigns like Carl Paladino's. But I think we make a mistake in dismissing a lot of that religious rhetoric as simply pandering. The reality is there is a very conservative religious strain within the Republican Party, which is speaking out of sincerity, and I think which is once again empowered by the times to express some pretty hard right conservative religious views.
So what is the line between sincerity and bigotry?
Well, there's no line at all. In the case of to take a politician like Senator Jim DeMint of South Carolina, who has become the sort of the flag bearer within the establishment for the Tea Party, a guy who is as vocal in his opposition to homosexuality as Paladino was. But there's no question, Jim DeMint means it. He's been saying it for a long time. His recent rhetoric was he had scaled back his anti-gay talk because he thought he couldn't get away with it, but he thinks the times are such now that he can really press full speed ahead. So he's sincere, and he is, I think, by any measure, taking a pretty bigoted view toward homosexuality.
And our number here is 212-433-9692 on the question of 30 issues in 30 days. Are Republicans pandering to religious bigotry? 212-433-9692. Ozzie, you were there the moment that Carl Paladino read a speech that he now walks away from, says he didn't write. Tell us about what Carl Paladino has been doing on the issue of religion, the issue of homosexuality.
It's a kind of complicated answer because he's been all over the map on this issue. He gave a speech. Well, he was first accused of being anti-Semitic because he agreed with someone who said Sheldon Silver, the assembly speaker, is the Antichrist and sort of and somehow equated him to Hitler. So to cover up that criticism that he was anti-Semitic, he appeared with Jewish groups. And in doing so, he spoke to what he thought were their core issues and beliefs. And a lot of that was geared towards tax credits for religious schools. And then in helping craft his speech, some of the members in that community inserted language into his speech, which he read almost entirely, denouncing homosexuality as being inappropriate, being brainwashing of children and things of that nature. And since that speech, he's been apologizing for his remarks. Now, he has tried to say that he supports gay rights all the way up until the M word, marriage.
Mm-hmm.
But in his speech, which he read and then delivered, he seemed to cast that aside. So it's a little bit unclear as to where he stands on that issue. And then there's questions about his business practices. He's a landlord, and he rents spaces to a place like an abortion clinic, although he denounces abortion. He rented space to a gay club, and then he turned it over. So there's questions as to what he says and what he does.
Do you think that he actually has a coherent philosophy on this? Maybe you could say he's mostly libertarian. He likes the money, but he has these personal views. Do you think it's coherent or a mishmash? It could be either that it's incoherent or maybe he's just not expressing it well.
I think it's both of those. He clearly is not a candidate that's disciplined. He clearly is not a candidate that has taken very careful positions. He's a guy that touts himself as speaking very off the cuff. But he has always said that he's conservative. He's always said he's against same-sex marriage, and he's always said he's against abortion. Yet when he enters into a political context, he seems completely unaware that his comments will be reported as he says them, and it doesn't always come with a half hour of explanation that he would like people to understand. He's delivering a message incredibly poorly, erratically, and it's very confusing to find out where he stands sometimes.
Not just Rudy Giuliani, who distanced himself from Paladino's remarks. Has the official New York Republican Party said anything about his remarks?
They said that if it was offensive, that it somehow should be distanced, but they tried to somehow apologize for it without calling it offensive, and they put some distance between themselves and a candidate who clearly is not sticking to script.
Do you think anything that Paladino has been saying is a reflection of our overall question and Republicans pandering to bigotry, or is this a case like the Daily News always calls him Crazy Carl, just being Crazy Carl? And I'm putting that in quotes. I'm not saying it, but you know, that's what he's called.
Well, it's a little bit unclear as to how he could correct this problem. I mean, he's tried to deliver remarks, and each time he does, he seems to be putting, you know, another foot in his mouth. Now clearly what's happening is his strategy is to say things, get free media, not pay for ads, and somehow get in front of people's faces by doing a lot of things that'll get him a headline. He referred to Andrew Cuomo as possibly having extramarital affairs. He got into a very heated confrontation with a reporter that confronted him and asked him for information on that. So he seems unafraid to make headlines. And at this point in the campaign, you know, you have to wonder if it's a strategic strategy at this point.
And I did notice that his response, which was first advanced by his campaign manager via Twitter, and then he said it himself at the Columbus Day Parade, was, "I am just saying what the Catholic Church's position is, and if Andrew Cuomo has a problem with that, he should talk to his priest." And that phrase, "he should talk to his priest," was said by both his campaign manager and him. I don't know if anyone asked him about his extramarital affairs and his out-of-wedlock daughter and talking to his priest.
Well, Archbishop Dolan was at the Italian Day Parade, and he was peppered with questions. And he basically said, look, everyone deserves dignity and respect, clearly putting him closer to Andrew Cuomo than Carl Paladino. And he didn't address specifically whether voters should have some kind of litmus test and say, you know, anti-abortion, anti-same-sex marriage, therefore you get my vote. He clearly stayed away from that type of litmus test. And he seems to be, you know, kind of leaning people towards a softer rhetoric, which is a pretty progressive position when you put it in context. And Carl Paladino is trying to use the Catholic Church as a wedge issue to peel off voters from Andrew Cuomo's corner.
Jeff Charlotte, sitting there as you are at a remove from New York politics, do you read into anything that Carl Paladino is doing as reflecting the party at large, or just, put it in quotes again, Crazy Carl being Crazy Carl?
I think it's reflecting a revival of the kind of old culture war debates we had back in 2004 that didn't figure as large in the 2008 election, but they're back. They're on a cycle in American politics. We haven't resolved these questions of politics and relationship questions like homosexuality, abortion, and you see that all over the country. You see a lot of the Tea Party candidates who are out there allegedly representing a sort of only libertarian economic view, but also coming forth very strongly for social conservative views, and the Republican Party sort of hustling to catch up and get back on that script. And guys like Carl Paladino, who, my read of Paladino is thought that he could kind of ride his libertarian anger to the governor's office, and now he wants to be part of the new conservative dialogue. So he's struggling to find a way to participate in a very religiously tinged anger without alienating huge constituencies in New York State.
I attended the Value Voters Summit in Washington, D.C. about a month ago, and the big talk there was how do the value voters, normally sometimes called Christian conservatives, how do they mesh with the Tea Party? And the value voters seem to be saying there's really no problem. There's a lot of overlap, and not too many of them have had heard Tea Party members saying, we really disagree with you on value stances like abortion or pornography or, you know, prayer in school.
There is an element out there in the Tea Party that's trying to hold on to this idea that it's just an economic agenda. But you look at the candidates who are emerging, like Christine O'Donnell, Senate candidate in Delaware, Sharon Angle, Senate candidate in Nevada, Joe Miller, sort of Tea Party Senate candidate in Alaska. And as important to their message as their economic views, maybe more important in the case of Joe Miller, I think it's abortion that put him over the top. And, again, you value voters somewhere. I think that brings us back to the fellow I mentioned earlier, Senator Jim DeMint, who is really functioning as a gatekeeper for the Tea Party that wants to come to Washington. And what DeMint is saying, you want to get to Washington, you want my very, very valuable endorsement, I need you to put a religious stamp on your economic views. And I think that's part of the pandering there, I think, if you want to call it pandering or if you want to call it sincere in some cases, is the idea that the religious views, the economic views themselves are religious views. If you look at DeMint, if you look at some of the Tea Party conservatives who are expressing religious ideas, it's not just these so-called social issues, but they say this kind of radical free market fundamentalism is itself God's wills for the economy. In as much as the economy is suffering, it's because we are interfering with it. And these are folks who take the invisible hand of the market very literally.
We're at 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. Our 30 Issues in 30 Days question, are Republicans pandering to religious bigotry? Alex from Queens, you're on WNYC. Go right ahead, Alex.
Hello. I had 2 points I wanted to make. One, what would be the difference between, quote-unquote, pandering, which has a negative connotation, and listening to one's constituency? And the second part is, you keep saying how it's Republicans who are listening to somewhat of a small group of Christian conservatives in the United States. I don't think that's a fair characterization, especially considering that so many Republicans are looking to win, that maybe it's not a small group just within the Republican Party, but it might be a much larger group within the entire United States voting populace. So, I mean, and if that were the case, wouldn't it kind of go from pandering to small bigotry group to listening to, you know, democracy there, if you will?
Yeah, democracy. What do you think of that, Jeff?
I guess I agree with the caller. I mean, what's happening is the religious right is kind of marching in the public square, as they do very effectively. They're well organized, and it's not because it's a small group. It's because you have a really big part of the American public that does have these conservative views. The one point where I might say that the caller wants to sort of look at what's going on there is the distinction between those conservative views on an issue like abortion abortion or homosexuality. And the more radical religious ideas that you're getting from some in the Tea Party about small government and kind of free market fundamentalism, those economic ideas as religious ideas, that doesn't have nearly as big a constituency when you go and you go out into evangelical America. You don't find nearly as conservative views on economics as you might think, but these two things are being wed. And I agree. I don't think pandering is the right word here. I think you are seeing, as usual, politicians, either the opportunistic or the cresting wave of a social movement. But there are going to be people who are going to try and direct that wave and push it directions that I think probably the masses out there weren't really engaged with or involved with or concerned about.
Ozzie, on the question of the Lower Manhattan Mosque, how stark was the partisan divide between Democrats and Republicans in New York?
It wasn't as stark as people would expect. Republicans were clearly opposed to it, raising a bunch of issues in terms of appropriateness and also in terms of funding. But Democrats, surprisingly, weren't as steadfast in their support of it. It was Mayor Michael Bloomberg who came out early, came out strong, and held firm in his support of the program. And other Democrats, if you listen to them, they said there was a right to build there. But when asked about the appropriateness, they seemed to waver back and forth on that.
Yeah. All right. What we're going to do is we're going to take a short break. Since we're talking about Republicans and conservatives, we're going to invite one in to discuss the issue. And I want to thank you, Ozzie, for talking the local aspect of our 30 Issues in 30 Days questions. Are Republicans pandering to religious bigotry? So, Jeff, hold on for a second. Ozzie, thanks a lot. And we'll be right back. Mike Peskin for Brian Lehrer on WNYC, discussing our 30 Issues in 30 Days questions. Are Republicans pandering to religious bigotry? In a second, Matt Towery will join us. Jeff Charlotte, we have very short time. And I know that you objected to the word pandering and the word bigotry. How would you rephrase it so that we could get a yes answer? And then I'll put it to Matt Towery. You would say Republicans are doing what with religious what?
I think Republicans are opportunistically or sincerely riding a revival of religious conservative sentiment and a lot of voters. But I don't shy away from the word bigotry when you hear the language coming from Carl Paladino and you hear the language from Senator Jim DeMint, folks who are really crying out against homosexuality as a threat to America. You know, you get guys like Senator Tom Coburn saying that gay people are one of the biggest threats to American democracy. That's bigotry. The problem we have is that those sentiments do have a real big constituency out there, and they also have some political champions who really believe in them and share those ideas and are going to push hard for them, not just now, but into the future in their political careers.
So Republicans are riding a wave of conservatism that sometimes borders on the or can be described as bigotry.
I think that is fair to say with respect to all those Republicans who don't share those views. There are some just plain old-fashioned bigoted views out there. When you go out and you spend time talking with conservative voters, it's part of the landscape right now.
All right. Thanks for your time. Thanks for joining us on this issue there, Jeff.
Thanks, Mike.
And now we want to welcome in Matt Towery. Matt has been an elected Republican. He served in the Georgia House of Representatives. He's a conservative author and activist. His new book is Paranoid Nation, the real story of the 2008 fight for the presidency. Hello, Matt.
Hi, how are you?
So you weren't here in the top of the hour when I played three or four ads where the mosque in Lower Manhattan was more than equated with terrorism, pretty much, you know, said it was part and parcel of terrorism. And of course, just a few examples or anecdotal evidence doesn't add up to proof, but we have been discussing the issue of Republicans pandering to religious bigotry. So what do you think about what Jeff Charlotte just said, that sometimes they embrace a worldview and mindset that does hinge on the bigotry?
Well, let me add a different perspective also. I was, pardon me, I was also Newt Gingrich's chairman when he was Speaker, the political chairman when he was Speaker of the House. And so I've had to deal, over the last 30 years, I've been involved in hundreds of political campaigns. In my judgment, you always have your fringe element out there. I don't think it's quite as big as it was back during some of the years when the Christian Coalition was at its height. You know, I find it somewhat ironic when you hear some Republicans talking about how terrible homosexuality is when it was very obvious and became very clear when he admitted it that the head of the RNC, the last head of the RNC, was a homosexual. So, I mean, you know, it's sort of a – it cuts both ways. And so I've never been one to enjoy seeing that sort of talk come out of Republican candidates. I just think it comes across as hypocritical. That having been said – with regard to the mosque, this is more of a pragmatic taking advantage of an opportunity. The mosque situation, I'm going to use the term mosque, even though it could be defined in many more articulate and specific ways.
Right. We call it the WNYC calls it the Lower Manhattan Mosque and Cultural Center, and they call it that because that is an accurate description of what it is.
Right. And I'm just going to say mosque, and you can all fill in that word.
Okay.
But the issue really became an opportunity for the Republicans when President Obama decided to make what I think was an ill-advised statement with regard to his views of religious freedom and the like. I'm not saying that he's not right about it, but what I am saying is that because the polling it just throughout the nation was going, you know, wildly against the concept of it being built in that location, that became a political opportunity for Republicans. And, you know, I've seen Democrats take advantage of political opportunities against Republicans. You got to remember, like I said, I was Newt Gingrich's political campaign chairman, and I certainly watched as they ran hundreds of ads once Bob Dole was clearly going to be the nominee against Bill Clinton, who also I liked a great deal, in which they talked about the Dole-Gingrich Congress. That certainly didn't do Bob Dole any good. But they took the opportunity that the fact that Newt was not popular at that time, and they sort of wrapped Newt Gingrich around Bob Dole's neck back in 1996. So both parties usually try to find the weak point. And in this case, while I don't think this is the primary weak point, I think the economy is what is really driving this Republican tailwind that we're seeing around the country. Yes, it's being used as a pragmatic campaign opportunity. And I'm not surprised at it at all.
Now, what about the fact that George W. Bush almost never missed an opportunity when speaking about the Muslim religion to say some variation of it is a religion of peace, or our war is not with Islam, or those terrorists weren't really Muslim. They had the warped sense of the religion. In fact, President Bush would often in his remarks talk about if you worship in a mosque or a synagogue or a church, or even if you don't worship at all. So he would extend a hand to atheists. It seems that at least in this election cycle, that tone in rhetoric is all but lost among Republicans. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that. And I think we're learning one thing about George W. Bush, and everybody has their different opinions about him, but as you look back, he did have, in many ways, an ability to put less of a strident tone into describing issues such as this. You know, we had the whole controversy with Regis Philbin yesterday on The View, in which he talked about, you know, Muslims and the like, and the several of the hosts.
Oh, that was Bill O'Reilly.
Oh, Bill O'Reilly.
I can't believe I know that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm getting everybody confused. But, yeah, Bill O'Reilly.
Oh, does every Irishman look the same to you, Matt? Is that what we're talking about?
Oh, I'm Irish.
I figured you were, yeah.
Anyway, in all reality, I think you've got one of these situations in which, yes, the tone and the rhetoric is a little bit different. But we're in the heat of a major, major potential movement in terms of the leadership of Congress. And so I'm not condoning it, don't get me wrong, but I am more than used to it. And I'm not surprised at all that there are individuals who, because you got to remember, in a 30-second TV commercial, you've got to make some choices, or in a 30-second radio commercial. And sometimes you have to be more broad in your description because that's the way the individual who you're trying to get to sees it. Sometimes you can be more specific and more diplomatic. Generally speaking, on both sides of the aisle, I find that in the last 3 weeks of a campaign, people choose not to be diplomatic. They choose to be more general, and that oftentimes comes across as bordering on being incendiary.
Well, let's take a call right here. And Manny in Manhattan, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, thank you for having me on. I just want to say thank you for having me on. You know, this isn't something new, and I kind of hate it when people bring up the Tea Party like this is something that just happened in the last 2-3 years. You look back at the American Liberties League in the 30s. You look back at, you know, the Southern strategy of Lee Atwater and Kevin Phillips and Barry Goldwater in the 60s. You look at Jimmy Carter, who did the rare thing where he combined black votes with white Christian votes in the 70s. But then again, you have Reagan, who got about 70% of the Christian vote. This is something that's not new. And what happens is when sort of a very powerful neoconservative cabal gets thrown out of power, that's when they go back to their values voters and they argue, hey, you know, look at our budget and look at the social conservative issues. And here's the thing, you know, you have somebody from Mr. Gingrich's campaign on. He used to campaign, for example, for being a fiscal conservative, and the size of the federal budget and how much federal spending there was. Meanwhile, Cobb County was receiving the second highest amount of federal spending, second only to Arlington County, which is home, of course, to the CIA and the Pentagon.
Right. Well, I think we lost there, Manny there at the end. And I don't know if the point is to re-argue the Gingrich candidacy. But but overall, in terms of history, it does put it in context. And so my question to you, Matt, is the ratcheting up of the rhetoric merely a reflection of a ratcheting up of people's beliefs and reflecting the populace? Or is it something else? Is it realizing that sort of rhetoric works? Is it realizing there aren't too many negative consequences when you link every Muslim with a terrorist?
Well, I think, and perhaps sadly so, but from a pragmatic standpoint in trying to win elections, the numbers in the polls that have been conducted, and it ranges from CNN all the way, which would be on one side of the aisle, to Fox on the other, the national reaction to building this center was overwhelmingly negative. And so I'm sure that Republican strategists said, look, we've got to take advantage of this opportunity. The president mentioned it once, and then I think on an ill-advised basis, then came back out, clarified it, and mentioned it again. And if you go look at the Real Clear Politics average of the president's approval rating, from the day that he made the statement, that's when his approval rating began to plummet. And these experts who run campaigns saw that, and they knew that was an opportunity that they could not resist taking advantage of. Is it completely fair and right? I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to defend that. Is there some bigotry? Certainly. I don't think, by the way, I will clarify one thing. I don't think we have a huge social values campaign occurring this year. The Republicans are picking up most of their support, quite frankly, off of the economy. And this is just sort of an extra kicker. But in every poll that I've seen, and I am part of a polling firm as well, nonpartisan, we poll for Politico and other organizations, we've seen the mosque issue as sort of an accelerator, you might say. But the economy is just the overwhelming driving issue right now that has been bringing these races so much closer for the Republicans.
Let's take one more call here. Rich from Amityville, you're on WNYC. Go ahead, Rich.
Good morning.
Hi.
I wanted to comment about, I do agree that the Republicans, actually any person who's running for an office, politician, is going to use inflammatory language about things to make them sound grandiose. And unfortunately, I want to actually call out phrases that have been used on your very own show just today.
Mm-hmm.
Things like gay marriage, homosexual marriage, same-sex marriage. And the point I want to make is that by pointing to that, what it sounds like a concession, and it points to the sexuality of the person and ignores the fact that it is a a civil rights issue about equality, marriage equality. And by pointing to that continuously, the Republican Party, and unfortunately the Democratic Party isn't helping any because they use the same language, is continually poking and poking at the religious views about homosexuality and the morality of homosexuality rather than on the broader view of a civil rights equality issue.
So you think gay marriage should be called universal marriage or something like that?
Well, the whole issue is about marriage equality. Whether you are straight or gay or bisexual, if anybody is granted access to the rights of marriage, then everyone should. And that's a civil rights equality issue. It has nothing to do with the sexuality of the person.
All right.
But it's definitely a religious bent to keep pointing and poking at phrases like gay marriage and same-sex marriage, and it avoids the issue, which is definitely, I don't know if you want to call it pandering or riding on the wave, whatever it is, it's particularly a religious bent.
All right. Well, thanks for that call, Rich. And Matt, I know that gay marriage was a much bigger issue in past campaigns, as you indicated. What is the future of that as an issue that motivates the conservative or Christian base? We're going to see more of that, do you think?
I don't really see that as big a motivating factor. We have issues that arise. I remember in 1990, for example, the hottest issue in this country was pro-life, pro-choice. It's still an issue, but it's not an issue that wins or loses elections now. And I think we're going to reach a point down the road at which the gay marriage issue is going to become less and less, and I hate to use that term because he just said it was sort of pejorative, so let's just say universal marriage or whatever. That's going to begin to be less of a moving factor. This country is really hurting, both Republicans and Democrats. And we can say that President Bush got it started. I don't think there's any question about that. We can say that President Obama maybe hasn't helped as much as he wanted to. But the fact of the matter is people are suffering right now. And that's what is motivating their political movement. And if the Republicans were in control, the Democrats would be moving way ahead. So it's part of the ebb and flow of politics. Yes, there's a lot of rhetoric involved. But a lot of things in politics have to do with timing, and the timing right now for the Democrats is rather difficult because of the sort of difficult circumstances we find ourselves in.
In our next segment, we were and are going to speak about a Broadway play called Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson. In part of that discussion, John Meacham of Newsweek, who is Andrew Jackson's biographer, is going to join us. But since he's here now, and since no one writes about politics and faith better than John Meacham, I thought we'd pose the question to him. Hello, John.
Hi, how are you?
So we're discussing in our 30 Issues in 30 Days series, the statement to agree with or disagree with is Republicans are pandering to religious bigotry in America. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I think we're at the end of about a 40-year cycle now, which began in January 1973 when the Roe versus Wade decision was handed down, where the Republican Party has very effectively harnessed the religious activism of conservative voters. And anyone who argues with that, I think, is not living in a fact-based universe. I agree with what y'all have been saying in terms of the motivating factors this year. And in a weird way, to put it in purely tactical, hardball, cynical terms, they haven't needed religion to motivate the base this year. And my personal view is anybody who's going to be susceptible to an argument that borders on or crosses over into religious bigotry is probably not a swing voter anyway. You know, this is not somebody who's a gettable person by and large. So my sense is that many conservative campaigns have used religion to identify with voters and win them to their cause. I think there's been less of it this year than in many years, but that's simply because they had a willing base that wanted to strike back at Obama. I think a lot of voters who might be susceptible to those appeals feel that the country in many ways is slipping away from them. I mean, that's the language of take our country back. Well, take it back from whom? I think what they mean there is they mean people who don't look like them, people like Barack Obama, and there's a great kind of white unease. You know, Frank Rich writes about this better than anybody, and I think that there's no doubt about it. I don't want to sound like just sort of passing on conventional liberal wisdom here,
right?
But I don't think there's any doubt about it, and I think that it started in 73. It was about race in the 60s, and it became more about religion after Roe versus Wade. And that was the real starting gun, I think. That was the Pearl Harbor of the culture wars.
Well, what's the consequence, especially if you say something that history deems as offensive or bigoted? John?
The consequence is that you have a country in which political leaders use a fundamental part of the human experience that in almost every tradition is about unity and charity to divide and conquer. And I think it's a terrible thing. I think the use of religion for political purposes of division is reprehensible. And you don't have – Abraham Lincoln used religion, but what did he use it for? He used it for union.
Right. And he said, unlike many, I don't say that I'm on God's side. I hope he's on my side, which
right.
is clever and an inversion and something that I think maybe a few political leaders today would say.
Barack Obama would say it.
Right.
Obama understands Lincoln's theology very well. Reinhold Niebuhr wrote a brilliant piece about Lincoln's religiosity and a religion of humility, of understanding irony, of understanding tragedy. Of understanding that religion is one element of human experience that is, in my view, personally, it is completely intrinsic. It's not something you can legislate out of politics. It's not something you can say, well, we're going to separate church and state. Well, yes, you can separate church and state, but you cannot separate religion from politics because both religion and politics are about people. It's about what motivates them. It's about their sense of destiny. And so one of the things that those of us who care about religion and care about politics, and that's just about everybody, what we have to be incredibly vigilant about is making sure that religion plays a proper role and not a disproportionate role, either in the making of policy or, I would argue, the making of majorities.
All right, John, you know what? Let's leave this part of our conversation there because we're going to talk about a Broadway show in a second. And let me thank Matt Towery, who was on. He's the author of Paranoid Nation, the real story of the 2008 fight for the presidency from Hill Street Press. Matt, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And by the way, if you want to talk about doing what the people want, this issue, one of our 30 issues in 30 days, was submitted and voted on by our Brian Lehrer Show listeners. And we are doing one listener-voted issue every Friday. You can find a schedule for the 30-issue series and listen to all the segments we've done through our politics site. It's afreecountry.org. Stick around. Andrew Jackson in just a moment.